you can agree to disagree when it comes to all the conversations about pollination, especially in this corn crop, but we know it's catching the attention of those in the marketplace. Hi, I'm Susan Littlefield with the American Ag Network. Arlen Suderman joins us today with StoneX as we dive into what's being talked about and how it might be having an effect on some of that market chatter.
Yeah, I think it's one reason that we're seeing the market kind of consolidate around this $4 area for September. We're seeing a little bit of strength there. I mean, the rallies are being sold, but we're still maintaining a firm undertones as the funds are kind of lightening their load a little bit of the short positions. That's part of the key is we're going into this with the funds having big short positions in corn. When you look at the pollination problems, and we're seeing these reports from across the Midwest, everyone's searching for a reason because for the most part, the weather's been pretty favorable for pollination this year. We always have pollination problems somewhere, but this year the weather's been pretty favorable. We have seen kind of the general theory that some of the new services are going with is, well, it's because of drier than we thought in some areas in the leaves, the whorl of the corn is remaining tight around the tassel, not allowing the pollen to get down to the silks. And in some locations, that may be the issue, but we're seeing these pollination issues in other areas as well. So I don't believe that that's the reason. I was an agronomist before I got involved in the markets. I've walked hundreds of cornfields. And there's something else at play. I don't know what it is. The matter isn't what it caused it at this point. It's check your fields and know what it is. Not everywhere has it. It seems to be what are the predominant hybrids planted in the area that in which you live. And, of course, it has to be far enough along in maturity past pollination for you to be able to tell. But there does seem to be an issue there that could, if this is a significant issue, prove to be a drag on the national average yield once we're all said and done.
So looking at that, I mean, we've been talking so much about ideal weather conditions that I think we kind of forget to look at the bigger picture of what's happening around this around the nation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. When we look at the pattern, overall, the 16 to 45 day model, all growing season long, has called for heat and drought to set up over the Midwest. And instead, what we had happen was we had a high pressure, and by the way, it's still calling for that, but it's never moved forward into the 15-day outlook. We've had a high pressure set up just off of the north Pacific Northwest, and another high pressure, the Bermuda High, off of our east coast, and in between, we've had a low pressure, and that Bermuda High has been pumping moisture into the center of the country. And so we've had tremendous rains in the south at times, saturating the soils, and that makes it easier then for the moisture to transport over that region into the Midwest. And while we may have lacked major systems at times, there's been enough ripples in the atmosphere to create thunderstorms to give us a scattered thunderstorm pattern. And now it looks like we're going into a situation with high pressure settling and developing in the south that we could get some ridge running storms. Some of them may be strong, but over the core of the Midwest. Now, maybe there will be some high winds with that, but it also means more rain. And overall, particularly you look at Nebraska, you look at Iowa, their crop potential, if they're able to survive these pollination issues, their crop potential looks tremendous. Other areas, maybe not quite so much as that. Eastern Midwest, when you look at the crop ratings, Eastern Midwest is the area struggling the most. But at this point, not enough to offset the good crops currently we see in Iowa and Nebraska and surrounding areas.
As we look at the continued tariff tensions that are out there and the wait and see that is coming our way, it's nice to see continued fresh export demand coming our way.
Absolutely. The one fly in the ointment is China. We did have a couple of cargoes this morning sold to unknown destinations, and that's going to raise rumors of, is that China? I'm going to remain skeptical until I see proof that it is, and is that significant enough volumes to make a difference. And the market's getting concerned about that because July is typically the time when China really ramps up its purchases of new crop soybeans for fourth quarter delivery. And so far, it's largely absent. But outside of that, overall, corn export demand really, really strong. And that's largely been driven by Mexico. And it's getting even stronger now because the Mexican border is closed to cattle coming north. And we, at one point, had 30,000 head per week of feeder cattle coming north to be fed in the United States feedlots. And that can't happen now because of the New World screwworm. And so those cattle need to be fed in Mexico. Well, that means it needs even more corn to do so. So higher corn exports to Mexico, but then we'll import the beef because we'll need the meat here. We have the shortage of protein in the United States. So the meat will come north into the United States. And so that's been the positive out of this. Will we be able to continue that in the year ahead? I personally think USDA is a little bit too optimistic on its corn and soybean export targets for the new marketing year that starts September 1 because of the big crops in Brazil that are going to impact our fall export season. But at least it's fairly solid if we can maintain the strong domestic demand.
As we wrap up our conversation today, Arlen, what is your takeaway on the livestock rally that we're seeing, even as we wait for some sort of cash to develop?
Yeah, consumer demand remains impressively strong. We are seeing a little bit of a pullback in some of the cuts of meat, some of the higher end cuts of meat as we pass the peak for barbecue season. But overall, the U.S. consumer wants protein in their diet. They're increasing protein, and that means meat. And that, to this point, has meant has been the best for the highest priced meat, which is beef. And so that continues to be strong. This week's cash trade looks to be steady at this point. We still really have an established trade this week, but that's the general thinking that we're going to be steady overall. We've pulled back the slaughter pace. 560 to 580,000 head is kind of the range that we seem to be locked in now. Carcasses are big. That's helping fill the gap. Imports are big, but that's being threatened now after August 1st by the 50% tariff that President Trump wants to put on Brazil, and they're our number one supplier of imported beef. So all of that combined is helping keep the cash market solid, and that's dragging the board reluctantly higher.
Arlen Suderman joining us today to break down the Wednesday market trade. As always, a quick reminder, commodity futures and options do involve a substantial risk of loss, not suitable to all investors. And that's the Wednesday version of the market wrap-up on the American Ag Network.